The Voices Dot Earth podcast series is brought to you by the Dot Earth Domain. In each episode, we shine a light on organizations and individuals who are part of the growing Dot Earth tribe, as well as those outside of our tribe who are all making our planet a better place. In this Voices Dot Earth podcast interview, we are speaking with Vasilis Kokoris with Spun.Earth, which is the Society for the Protection of Underground Networks, which aims to make underground conservation a global priority, preserve critical underground systems via a map and protect strategy, as well as drive innovation to utilize the underground as a climate solution. And Vasilis, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here with you today.
Yeah, likewise. And let's go ahead and kick it off. And if you don't mind, let's start at the top. If you can give us a high-level overview of Spun, the organization's mission, history, and all that good stuff.
Perfect. Well, first of all, I have to tell you how the idea started, right? Because the idea started when we were thinking about the fight against climate change. Our mind is usually fixated into planting trees, and we only think what's happening above ground. This is the way to protect against climate change. But the truth is that we've been neglecting what's happening below ground, and the ecosystems that are hidden below our feet actually play an essential role on keeping the plants alive and also keeping more carbon stored in the soil. And this is where the Spun idea came in. We want literally to put this untapped resource on the map and make it what is invisible so far to make it visible. And the Spun is a scientific research organization. It was co-founded by the amazing Dr. Toby Kears and Colin Averill. And I want to give you some numbers just to bring things into perspective, just to understand why it's significant and why it's important to look into these underground networks. So globally, approximately 75% of the terrestrial carbon is stored in the soil. So this means that we have three times more of the amount of stored soil than the amount of soil that is stored in living plants and animals. And these fungal networks that we're interested in preserving and protecting make up to 50% of the living biomass in the soil. Now, overall, in Spun, we advocate for the fungal networks and the services they provide as a global public good, analogous to clean air and water. And we believe that these networks are a massive untapped global resource that is absent for current conservation and climate agendas. What we want to do is bring attention, talk about the significance, and include them in these agendas in the future.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I appreciate that rundown there. And let's dive in a little bit deeper, because I've never really heard much about this. This is new information for me, and I thought it was fascinating. So there really are complex microbial networks that are underground, and they're also very critical for regulating the Earth's climate and ecosystems. And would love to hear more about that.
Yeah. So the story goes way, way back, actually back 450 million years approximately. This is when the interaction between these fungi and plants started to be formed. So we have a totally different environment in Earth back then, and the plants are not colonizing the land yet. So for the plants to colonize the land, the help of the fungi is needed. So this is where the fungus comes in, and the mycelium helps the plant to mitigate into the Earth, actually as a first primitive root system, because the plants back then didn't have a developed plant root system. So with the help of the fungi, now the plants colonize the land, and they spread, and they become abundant, and we have a high network of fungi building in the soil. And this actually terraformed the planet. We have this inconceivable change of 90% reduction in the atmospheric CO2 just because of this incredible partnership between plant and fungi. So actually, the planet changed and became how we know it today, and we're able to live in it. So through all these years of coevolution, because you think that after all these years, when the plant have this successful partnership, they don't want to lose it. And this is true. It remained for all these years. And approximately 90% of all the plants, they do still associate with mycorrhizal fungi. And they do tap into these underground networks. So through all these years, the fungal networks now dominate ecosystems, specifically ecosystems that are really important of holding carbon, such as the grasslands, which now cover about 25% of the land of the Earth. And we know that they contribute almost 20% of terrestrial carbon sinks. So again, to put numbers in, just to bring things into perspective, if we could look under a single hectare of grassland, we'd find more than 90 billion hectares of fungal hyphae. And this is, 90 billion, which is almost equivalent to 13 million Amazon rivers in length in a single hectare. So this is an incredible long and big number, but this is to show how significant they are and how much carbon they store in this biomass. And kind of poetically, talking about Amazon River, that these fungal networks, they do look like rivers. So within this hyphae, which is a tube-like structure, and this is the body, this is how they grow, we have nutrients that flow in all directions, and they transfer to the trees, they transfer to other fungi, and this all interconnected network. So there are really three important things, that three important functions that these fungal networks perform. First of all, and way, way importantly when it comes to climate change, is that they are carbon sequesters. So the mycorrhizal fungi create these complex networks that move the carbon from plant roots into the soil. And it's really important because the soil that goes below ground now, it's way more stable compared to other forms of biomass. For example, compared to a leaf that breaks down easily and then brings back the CO2 into the environment. So in the underground networks, we have three primary ways of sequestering carbon. First of all, the fungi can grow extremely fast into the soil. So you have, in a single hour, approximately billions and billions of hyphal tips grow for 1,200 micrometers an hour, which is 10 times faster than how a hair grows. Secondly, so you can imagine how fast the system is growing and how much carbon can keep underground, because it needs the carbon to build the biomass. And this is all the game. The fungus gets carbon from the plant. This is its food. Secondly, we have carbon that is used to create fungal exudates. So the fungi do produce these chemicals that they exit from the hyphae in the hyphosphere. So it's the soil that surrounds the hyphae. And that binds the soil together. So this contributes to the stability of the soil. And third, we have carbon stored in the fungal necromass. Necromass is the dead biomass of the fungus. But because it's so persistent, it doesn't break down easily and actually holds the soil together and keeps carbon stored for a really long time. So these are the three important ways that they store carbon into the below ground. The second important function that these fungi and these networks perform is, of course, a foraging. About 80% of the phosphorus uptake in the plants comes from the mycorrhizal networks. And phosphorus is really important because it's a really immobile and hard to get nutrient from the plants, but also is not infinite. So the way it works is that the fungus is going to colonize the plant. By colonizing the plant means that it actually gets into the root system or creates a layer around the root system and then expands the mycelium, expands the hyphae deep into the soil. And this is where the exfoliation happens. So kind of acts like an expansion of the root system. So it's a benefit of the plant. The plant now has an increased absorbing capacity by almost 1,000 times. So the hyphae will explore the soil, will take the nutrients, will give them back to the plant, and will take carbon as a currency. So now why phosphorus is so important to the game? So phosphorus is really mobile, as I said before, and it's not infinite. We do take it from rock phosphate. We need to mine it as a rock phosphate, which is non-renewable. So we're running out of it. We know that in 30 years, the demand is going to be higher than what we have to mine and give into the agriculture, for example. So that will bring great problems in agricultural sustainability of humanity. What these networks do is they can actually mobilize really healthy form of phosphorus in the soil. So we don't need to actually give excess phosphorus like we do nowadays in agriculture. We can preserve it, we can give less, we can rely on the networks, we can rely on healthy fungi to extract this phosphorus and give it to our plants. The third and also really important function that these networks perform is they are protectors. So because of all these years of evolution, they've been building a really, we can say, relationship of trust with the plants. So when they colonize the plants do produce chemicals. The chemicals can protect them from insects and other parasites. Also, overall, the relationship, because we have also transfer of water, it can protect plants and gain drought. The mycelium can trap heavy metals, so it can protect plants from toxicity. So overall, they are really crucial for the growth of plants. And like I said before, 90% of the plants all around us do form this interaction. So it's an important relationship that we cannot neglect and we cannot destroy.
Interesting. That's a great rundown there. Appreciate all that background. Fascinating stuff going on under our feet. You know, it's a whole universe happening down there. And exactly. I also understand there's a whole universe of threats to these underground networks. So what are some of the threats that are out there right now?
Yeah, exactly. And this is what we want to bring in attention with FAN. So the three major things, it's habitat loss, It's agriculture. It's again into part of habitat loss, but it's category by itself. And of course, climate change and climate disruption. So with habitat loss, three different categories apply here. Logging, agriculture, which I will talk about it separately, and urbanization. So all these three factors can disturb the networks largely, especially logging is really damaging. So if we look, because the pathfinding networks are really sensitive to this disturbance. So for example, with logging, we can lose about 95% of the mycorrhizal networks. And urbanization, of course, again, the same problem. We will lose about 20 or 30% of diversity within the soil. So when habitats are destroyed, the fungal communities is drastically altered. So we have shifts in the microclimate. We have, of course, loss of plant host resources. And of course, if there is no plant to give carbon, then we have loss in other ground diversity. And of course, we have massive increase in soil erosion. And the damage can take many years to recover. So specifically for logging, we know it takes more than a decade. And the damage is can be irreversible if we keep doing it all the time. So ecosystem with plant fungal networks store about eightfold more carbon compared to ecosystem without mycorrhizal fungal networks. So when we take the network from the equation, we see how much less carbon we can store now. And all this carbon comes back into the atmosphere. The second thing, which is really important here, is agriculture. Agriculture has been done really aggressively when considering the underground networks. We have intense tillage. Tillage can break down the networks, and the connections take time to rebuild again. And using pesticides or excessive amount of fertilizer, that also disturbs the community. We have so many studies showing that the diversity below ground in agricultural fields is so much reduced. So we lose a lot of species. We lose important functions of agricultural fields compared to wild native fields. For example, common chemicals like Roundup that anyone can buy and just throw in the garden, it can reduce the networks by 700%. Totally destroys it. But in the other hand, conventional agriculture, it has its latest practice. So we know that fungal network formation can be 2/3 reduction compared to no-till and organic practices. So we do urge the use of practices that are more friendly to the networks, and there are ways to do that. And of course, the last one is climate disruption. We have fires that reduce fungal biomass up to 96%. Again, the networks are really sensitive to high-intensity fires. And we know climate change is real, it's here, it's happening, we experience it every day. We have extreme temperature, we have drought, we have floods, and we have events that happen more often, and more importantly, they're more intense. So we have intensified events. High-intensity fires can destroy, like I said, up to 90% of the networks, and will take it before it goes back to normal. So changes in fungal communities can also alter plant community structure because, like I said before, the plants, the fungi are interconnected. You disturb one, you disturb the other as well, inevitably. And to the other level also, we have disturbing the richness of other fungal feeders, such as arthropods in forests and grasslands. So the damage is going to all the levels, and we have irreversible problems when it comes to this.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot, a world of threats there. Thank you for enlightening us on that, Vasilis. And so the next question is, how is Spun, you know, addressing this? What are some of the things that you all are doing or are planning on doing?
Yeah. The major goal with SPAN is that we want to map the fungal diversity. It's something that is missing. It's something that is a lot neglected. So together with Global Fungi, with Global Soil Microbiome Consortium, and many researchers across the globe, the goal is to identify high-priority underground ecosystem regions. So we want to find regions that they are really high in diversity, they store a lot of carbon, and protect them. And of course, eventually, we would like to map everything as possible, all the earth, all the underground networks, and find out where the carbon is stored, how it's stored, preserve the diversity, and understand why specific parts are hotspots and use that in our advantage. Of course, the other goal is to give a change in perspective. We have to bring a change in perspective to make people realize the importance of the underground, make them understand why these networks have to be considered, have to be added in preservation agendas, have to be added in climate change agendas, and have to be thought of. and of course to educate. And with educate, I mean to support development of viable and no damaging climate and biodiversity solutions that rely on healthy and diverse fungal networks. So, and there is actions that we can take, like in everyday life, from the individual level to community level to city level to all the levels. So, for example, we should not leave soil bare. We should use ground coverage with native flora. So, give plants to connect to the network, a native network, and have interactions. To cover soil with organic matter to actually feed the networks. Give organic matter to break down and take the carbon below ground. To advocate for green roofs. Green roofs can provide a step for the network to spread because we have aerial dispersal of the spores of these fungi. So when we have gardens all over existing and aerial gardens and green roofs, then we can have the spread of new networks over and over. And of course, when it comes to agriculture, do not till and dig aggressively. We break down the networks that way. We destroy the connections. So this is not beneficial for the crops either. Do not fertilize with excess fertilizer. Instead, focus on a healthy below ground ecosystem that will provide these nutrients to the plants. And of course, we have to prevent urban networks as well. We have to plant trees and seeds in any bare location. These are ways that we can actually preserve the networks around us. And this is the goal of SPAM. We also have to educate and bring attention to people the significance of these underground networks.
Yeah, that's great. What an awesome mission there that you all are doing. And also as well, your website is spun.earth. You all are users of the .earth domain. Why did you all choose .earth? Yeah.
I mean, for the very purpose that .earth domain was created, because for us too, the earth is first. So this is what we're doing. We care about the earth. We want to bring attention to that. And we want to draw attention to the conservation and protection of the planet. And that's the very reason.
Excellent. Well, Vasilis, we really appreciate your time today. And our last question is, what's the future vision for SPUN? What does the future hold for you all?
Well, bigger plan is, like I said before, is to, first of all, map the diversity. So we want to create a highly collaborative network with a generation of what we call myconauts, myco from the Greek or from fungus. And, you know, it's a funny word, but I really like it. So the myconauts will sample the soil ecosystem of the world, and we will understand the diversity across the globe. And of course, we always want to include the voice of the youth because they are people demanding for end-to-end climate action. We want to amplify that voice and include it to our story.
Excellent. And this concludes this Voices.Earth podcast interview with Vasilis Kokouris with Spun.Earth, which is the Society for the Protection of Underground Networks, which, as you heard, aims to make underground conservation a global priority, preserve critical underground systems via a map and protect strategy, as well as drive innovation to utilize the underground as a climate solution. And Vasilis, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Mike. It was my pleasure being here. Thank you for listening to all this.
Thank you for listening to this segment. .earth is a real live internet domain that anyone can use. Listeners can go to our Voices.earth site to find out what others are doing with their unique .earth domains. Through Voices.earth, you can also secure your own .earth domain name through all major registrars.